Happy New Year.
We're back. Welcome to episode 11 of View from the Bridge for the 12th of the 1st, 2006. Here at View from the Bridge, we bring you all the news when we can of the Belfast Giants in the Elite Ice Hockey League. My name is Patrick Smith, and with me as always is Aaron Kernan. How are you doing, Aaron? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Paddy. Happy New Year to everyone who's listening. Yep, welcome back to everyone after a couple of weeks of various technical problems.
Not enough beer, I think, is the main technical problem. I think I'm sobering up after the Christmas period. I don't know about yourself, Aaron.
Well, now I'm off the drink at the minute, so we'll see how long that lasts.
We'll see. This week at View from the Bridge, we're going to try to bring you up to date on what's been, briefly bring you up to date on what's been going on over the Christmas period. We'll also be looking at the games of the weekend gone past between Newcastle and Coventry. Also, today I had a chance to speak with Sports Broadcaster of the Year and G Crew correspondent, Nigel Ringland, who'll be talking to us more about the controversy behind the game in Coventry and about today, this week's sad news, at the retirement of Jason Ruff. So let's just crack on, as they say. A successful Christmas period.
Yeah, very successful. Our little homestand of five games, as we were rightly told it was, resulted in five good wins, helping us solidify our position at the top of the table. Then went over to Edinburgh for the third time this year for the new National Cup and picked up a win there as well. And then we're back home last Saturday against Newcastle.
Yes, the five wins, the maximum 10 points, exactly what Coach Courtney wanted to gain from that. Like you say, solidifying our chances of winning this league. As for the Knockout Cup, we came away with a good win there, and hopefully we'll be able to carry that on in the second leg.
Yeah, 7-2 away win. Always important, obviously, to get a win, or well, to try and keep the game as close as possible in an away leg in a two-leg game, but to get a big win like that's important, and it enables, as I've just read this evening, or just heard this evening, Nathan Carreas, I believe, will be starting this Saturday night against Edinburgh. So it enables Mike Menard to get a rest before the big game that we've got on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Big game on Sundays against the Newcastle Vipers. And last Saturday night, we were up against the Newcastle Vipers again. And a 4-0 win.
Yeah, a 4-0 win. A very, very important game. You know, it's one of those, as they call it, sort of taking our football terminology, almost a four-pointer. You know, if Newcastle had won, it would have brought them that bit closer to us in the challenge for top spot in the league, whereas a Belfast one, which, as you've stated, we did, it stretched that lead and gave us a little bit of breathing space if the other teams who've still got a few games in hand are to manage to pick up maximum points. And those does give us now, I think it's a four-point cushion, or possibly a three-point cushion, something along those lines, right at the top when everyone's caught up with us games-wise.
Mm-hmm. A bit of a rough game, by all accounts.
Yeah. It started off, I think what started the most of the roughness was Jason Bowen hitting Andre Payet, one of the biggest hits I've seen in a long time, into the boards, knocked his helmet almost clean off. And after that, Andre Payet pretty much had one thing in mind, and that was just running around hitting people rather than trying to play, you know, a good solid game of ice hockey. Mm-hmm. But the first 10 or 15 minutes actually was probably the best we've seen of the Newcastle Vipers in the Odyssey this season. You know, we've beaten them quite comfortably. Well, it was tight the first game, but we've beaten them quite comfortably the last couple of times we've played them. And they've not looked a good side, but they really did look like they could play until they started messing around like that.
That's an awful shame, considering that Newcastle are so high, are flying high in the elite league like ourselves, and for a team who for their first season in this league is quite encouraging. But if the likes of Andre Payet and whoever start throwing their fists around and trying to basically muscle us out of the game, well, I'd like to think we can outplay them.
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't even so much his fists that he was throwing around. I think he turned down Jason Bowen at least twice, as far as I could really make out. One time it was pretty clear that he turned him down, where those who were seated fairly near the ice heard him basically say no, before he eventually did towards, well, right in the last few minutes of the game, he did finally drop the gloves with Jason Bowen. But he didn't produce any punches until after he'd produced one of the best judo throws I've ever seen in an ice hockey game to put Jason Bowen on the ice. And once Jason Bowen was lying on the ice, he then proceeded to swing his fists. But
Man of class.
A man of class, yeah. But again, Jason Bowen got up and threw a few Paul Cruz-esque over-the-top right hands, which got him pretty well. So I mean, it wasn't much of a fight, but...
Well, either way of it, we came away from the game 4-0 up, so...
Yeah, exactly.
I think that speaks volumes.
Yep, and just on the... I know we don't like talking about the fighting, but this one is slightly different. After 6 years of waiting and wishing for a goalie fight, Mike Translink Menard, as he's now been named, produced two in the matter of 6 seconds. First of all, Paul Ferrone, I believe, went in. He couldn't quite get the blocker off, so he just used that rather than his fists. And then, say 6 seconds later, that man of class we've already talked about, Andre Payet, skated in and gave him one of the biggest snow showers I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And Menard was up, and I think he'd already loosened the blocker and catcher from the previous one.
Well, it's good to see the bit of excitement. Menard, of course, picking up yet another shutout at the Odyssey.
Well, no, this is one of these controversial ones, because
Nathan
Craze did come in 8 minutes from the end.
What do you think was the reason behind that side, that Nathan Craze was brought in?
Well, we did have the game won, so there was only 8 minutes left, and the Vipers at that stage weren't really... They did have chances, and Menard again, like Mike Menard made some fantastic saves again, but they didn't really look like they were going to get, you know, they weren't going to get four goals in the last 8 minutes, as far as I could tell, really, from the way they were playing. I guess there's the other way you could look at it. Possibly Mike Menard asked to come out of the game.
My own take on it would be that with Ferrone and Payet trying to obviously rough up the goalie early doors, as they say, maybe it was a show of strength by Ed Courtney that if you try to take out this goalie, you're going to face this one, who is up to the test.
Yep, he certainly was, and he preserved the shutout. Now, I don't know whether that means it's a team shutout or whether it goes to Mike Menard and the stats, mm-hmm. but I think it shows a pretty good team spirit again, that Mike Menard wasn't in any way annoyed mm-hmm. that he went out of the game with a possible shutout. It just shows that basically everyone in the team's fighting for each other. Mm-hmm.
Well, from that, we fired off into an away game against the Coventry Blaze, and dear, oh dear, it was a nasty loss and a nasty game, by all accounts.
The 3-0 loss, first time we've been shut out this season.
Mm-hmm. It had to be by Mark Klempa.
Exactly, last season's Kingdom of the Giants MVP mm-hmm. For the regular season. But again, I think Mike Menard came out quite big, but... And we'll hear, as we've said, from Nigel later what he thinks happened. And as we've said before as well, the Giants just don't seem to travel too well. After a game like that on Saturday night, which was really, it must have been one of the longest games in Odyssey history, I would say as well, just with the general the way it went on. The third period was only just beginning when we'd normally have been leaving the arena.
Well, the game in Coventry ended up, as you say, was a 3-0 loss. And, it was marred by events regarding Theo Fleury and the Coventry crowd.
Yeah, I've read so many different viewpoints on it. It's hard to know basically what's the truth, and I don't think we'll ever really know the definite truth. I think my position and what I believe and what seems to be probably as near to the truth as we're going to get is that the majority of the Coventry crowd were producing what you call banter. You know, not friendly, but the kind of thing that we produce ourselves in the Odyssey, a bit of just trying to put a player off his game.
Yes.
Oh, well, there does seem to...
I know you try that, Aaron.
I'm sure Mark Bernard would have something to say about that.
Bernie Roos.
But there does appear to have been, and there are reports that certain other unsavory things, and when I say unsavory, I mean a lot worse than banter. Things that obviously we're not going to repeat here. And there's also reports that one fan was actually ejected from the game for being heard to use these taunts.
It's sad that people get ejected for the games, but if you're going to have an attitude like that, then I'd like to think that security cover will nip it in the bud, so to speak.
Well, as has been sort of said on various forums around the league, if there are things going on, and it's a fair point, if there are things going on and people are saying things and all of a sudden they see four big security guards in front of them, they are going to stop it. Mm-hmm. And so security aren't going to hear what is being said. So, you know, that which is a fair point, but...
Unfortunately, Theo got kicked from the game and and didn't appear for the third period, rumoured to have left the arena to avoid any more. But
He has said the same himself on the interview, which is available on the Fan 590 Toronto website.
Well, earlier on today, I got a chance to speak with a man who was at the game, sports broadcaster of the year, but more importantly, the G Crew correspondent, as I was told, as you'll hear in the interview, for A View from the Bridge, Nigel Ringland. Okay, well, just this point of the show, I'd like to welcome Nigel Ringland. Nigel, welcome to A View from the Bridge. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Listen, guys, it's an absolute pleasure to finally be invited on.
Well, Nigel, Aaron got to join you on your show, so it's only fair that you get to join us on ours. Yeah, I think you'll agree, it's been an eventful week.
It's been one of the longest, I tell you what, Paddy, it's been one of the longest weeks I can remember, in terms of, stories and things hitting the headlines and, you know, in fact, the game against Newcastle actually seems, you know, there was a lot to talk about. There would have been a lot of talk about if we were just talking about the Newcastle game. That seems so far away now, and nobody's even giving it a second mention.
We'll talk about the controversy regarding Theo and Coventry at the minute, but, on Sunday, as you say, Marty Klempa became the first netminder to shut us out. How was the game?
Well, as for the game itself, there's no doubt that Coventry were quicker to the puck, played a much better game, and to be absolutely honest, you know, Martin Klempa, I think, ended up making 30 saves, but he was only really tested in the third period. Whether or not all the extracurricular activity that went on would have made any difference to the final result, I'm not so sure. The Giants looked tired. They'd obviously come off a big win, a big home win against Newcastle. When you look at the league table, the gap between them and Coventry was massive. I'm not saying they didn't go out there to try and win the game. Of course they did. Of course they didn't want things to go the way that they did. But I think that going into the game, it was going to be tough, and people knew and expected, you know, that things were going to happen, especially after the first time the Giants had been there. Whether or not that proved a distraction to the coach and the players, eventually they lost the game. But nobody was using that as an excuse. Nobody was using what went on as an excuse for losing to Coventry, who on the night played much better. They always play well in their own barn, and in the end deserved the win. And as you say, Marty Klempa showed at home. He's been a bit shaky on the road this year, but certainly at home on Sunday night, he reminded me of some of the performances that he put in a Giants shirt last season.
Mm-hmm. It's been.
I just say as well, Paddy, actually, that at the other end of the rink, Mike Menard was outstanding as well, and made two saves that Giants fans are not going to get a chance to see, probably, unless somebody gets the game tape or whatever. They were top drawer, NHL, incredible saves. Two of the best I've seen this season.
Well, Minnie's been pulling them out of the bag also all over the show. He's been absolutely phenomenal this season.
He has been, and you saw how well he played against Newcastle in that shutout last week. But, you know, even though he let three goals in on Sunday night, it could have been a lot worse. 3-0 could have been a lot more for Coventry. He made a skate save in the third period that was just unbelievable. I don't know how he managed to get to it.
Mm-hmm. It's a shame that performances like that are marred by the events that also took place that evening.
Well, where to start? Where to start with what went on? Ugly is the word I used. Shameless, classless are words that Courtney used after the game to me when I was talking to him. It's a shame. It's actually something that doesn't do the game any good. Because Theo was involved, the story has made headline news around the world, especially in North America. I've read it on NHL.com. Papers in Edmonton, Calgary, Toronto, and beyond have carried the story. And regardless of which side you take, what stories you choose to believe, or whatever, it's been a very bad, negative story for the Elite League on a worldwide level.
It's really not something we want in the game.
It's not something you want to see. And now, having said that, you know what? You've been on the internet this week. I've been on the internet. I've written stuff about it. I've listened to what people have said about it. And, you know, there were 2,500 people there in the arena with 2,500 different versions of what went on. So you pay your money, you take your pick as to who you want to believe or who you don't want to believe. I think two things spring to mind this week. One, there were Coventry players that went up to Ed Courtney and other Giants players and said that they were embarrassed. Also, I know that the Giants office has received a number of emails from Coventry fans apologising for the behaviour of others in the arena and saying how disgraceful it was. Now that to me, that's not me making those up. Mm-hmm. That's not a Belfast journalist, supposedly biased and et cetera. And I've been accused of a lot of stuff personally this week. That's not me saying that. I didn't make these up. I didn't send these emails. I didn't make these people send their emails. I didn't make the players do what they did. So if anybody needs some sort of, if anybody wants to try and work out exactly what went wrong, ask yourself this. Why would there be such an extreme reaction from Theo, Ed, and other players if there was no provocation? And why did some of the Coventry fans themselves and players apologise and say that they were embarrassed by what went on? Mm-hmm. Don't take my word for it. Go ask those fans. Go ask those players. You know why it was they felt that way.
Exactly.
And I think you get a fair indication as to exactly how bad it was and what went on.
Yeah, exactly. It begs the question, like, why now? Why hasn't it happened earlier on in the season? If there wasn't any provocation, why now? And it didn't happen in Newcastle, or it didn't happen in Cardiff, or it hasn't happened in Edinburgh. Why specifically Coventry?
Well, that's a good question. And I'm afraid that next week's Elite League meeting, my colleague, the general manager of Coventry, has a lot of questions to answer. He's a lot of questions to answer as far as the facilities at his own arena are concerned. There's no plexiglass behind the players' benches. So therefore, the players will always have their backs turned on the fans, and the fans are hanging over the ledge right on top of the players with no protection whatsoever. You can hear everything that goes on if you're a player. You can see everything that goes on. And when you turn your back on the fans, you know, a situation like that was escalating and spiraling out of control, who knows what happens? Who knows what can happen? You know, so there's safety concerns. There's security concerns. I watched stewards and security people turn to the Coventry fans and laugh this up. And my colleague can go on and say whatever he wants, but that is what happened. Mm-hmm. The security guys were just laughing it up. Also, the announcing team, not one announcement during the entire evening was made to try and defuse the situation. Not one announcement was made for calm. Not one announcement was made to try and persuade people that this was a game of hockey that they were there to watch and nothing else. Instead, the announcers went the other way and actually incited the crowd even more by some of the things that they said. And all this contributed to a very inflammatory atmosphere that Coventry did nothing to control. And I think that's the key point. Forget about whether it's Theo Fleury involved. It doesn't make any difference whether Theo Fleury is being personally abused or whether it's Graham Walton or Todd Kelman or Andre Payet or Ed Patterson or whoever. It doesn't make a hoot of difference. It's how the situation is controlled within the arena, and there was no control over that situation. And that's the key point I think the Giants are trying to get across.
How did the fans react once Theo actually was ejected and left the arena?
Well, for the first 10 minutes of the third period, there was mice. I mean, seriously. I mean, there were those. You know, this was premeditated from before the game. The announcers in the media gallery were already discussing how could we wind Theo Fleury up? How could we do this? It was premeditated, not towards winding the Giants up, or not towards, you know, it was towards one person. I heard that, and I got to the media gallery just over an hour before the game started, and that's what was being discussed. This was premeditated, it was planned beforehand, and of course, once the game got going, you know, things began to escalate and spiral right out of control as far as that's concerned. You know, once the third period started, sure, you know, Coventry 3-0 up, and it wasn't much of a contest at that stage. Anyway, for the fans to get into the game. But, for those who had come to, you know, not enjoy the ice hockey, not enjoy the game, but those who had just come to shout abuse and to enjoy themselves and wallow in the fact that they managed to get Theo Fleury thrown out of the game, congratulations, they achieved exactly that. And, you know, I hope it was well worth the money that they paid.
Both teams have backed off into their own camps now, and both GMs have released their own statements on the situation.
Well, certainly, I think that there has to be a stand taken by someone as far as this problem's concerned, because I think we've already seen, you know, I think we've already seen other teams have problems when they've gone to Coventry. So this isn't just a one-off, and it's not specifically the Giants, but there are other teams who have had problems when they've gone to Coventry with the home supporters. And Belfast issued a statement, took a stance on this, backed their coach, backed Ed Courtney, also backed Theo Fleury, which in my opinion was entirely the right thing to do. Coventry then responded with a statement of their own where basically they blamed everybody else except themselves. You know, even the Giants statement took into account that what the players did with the taunts, they were punished by the officials on the ice. They acknowledged, you know, the security situation at the Odyssey and how they try and control the security at the Odyssey. And we had an example of that against Newcastle last Saturday night whenever a couple of visiting fans who were being abusive towards other Belfast Giants fans were taken by security and escorted out of the building. Happened at Coventry. Not one supporter was escorted from the building on Sunday night, no matter what the situation was. Coventry, as I say, they've buried their head in sand and they're blaming everybody else except themselves. Both camps, as you say, seem to have retreated now and will deal with the situation behind closed doors, and basically that means that it'll obviously be discussed at the monthly meeting next Wednesday night. But there are certainly big concerns here. It is the job of those that run the league to protect their players. And it'll be interesting to see what decisions come out of that meeting, because, of course, the Giants go back to Coventry in the not-so-distant future on the 29th of January. And John Elliott, it will be quite right to demand some assurances from Coventry that their security will be tighter and that the facilities there, if they can be improved before the Giants go back there.
Another minor aspect of it was this week, with the game against Newcastle on Sunday, Paddy O'Connor of Newcastle came forward and asked for the Newcastle fans to show a bit of class.
Well, this has to be nipped in the bud. I mean, it absolutely has to be stopped at source. And credit to Paddy O'Connor, who's taken some flack from, I believe, Dave Sims at Sheffield for issuing such a statement. But, you know, I mean, I don't think there's a problem. First of all, I hope Newcastle fans do show more class than their counterparts in Coventry. That would certainly be one thing that I would call upon them to do. It's something, of course, can spread around the league very, very quickly. But you know what? I don't think it's going to deter. These people who think that they're getting under the skin of the Belfast Giants and in some way, all Sunday night's game did was pull the Giants players together. If you think they were determined to win the Elite League title before last Sunday night, believe you me, by the time they walked out of Coventry on Sunday night, they had redoubled their efforts to make sure that the championship comes back to Belfast. All it has done is made them a tighter knitted group of players determined to go out there and bring the trophy back to Belfast, especially due to the fact that they'll be taking it away from Coventry. And, anybody who thinks that going to a game and trying to get under the skin of the Giants, that in any shape or form is going to work is, I'm afraid, sadly mistaken. At the end of the day, the only reason these guys, decide, and guys and girls, I have to say, I'm not going to be sexist in this, there were women shouting abuse as well. The only reason why they hit the Giants is, well, take a look at the league table, and that's the only thing that anybody has to be concerned about. And, whenever people are shouting at you, you're usually doing something right. And, you know, Theo Fleury's points total this year proves that he's doing something right. Giants are top of the league. In some sort of perverse way, you've got to take it as some sort of compliment and try and not rise to the bait. Having said that, that's easier said than done, because, you know, it's not my name, it's not your name that they're shouting.
Mm-hmm. Says it all, mate. Says it all. It's quite unfortunate this has actually taken precedence in the news, because, quite sadly, we'll have to do it with the rest of the season without Jason Rough. Sad news this week that Jason's announced his retirement.
Yes, I just want to point one thing out for Giants fans and everybody else. If Jason Rough was physically able to play out the rest of this season, he would be playing the rest of this season. This is not Jason deciding just to leave his teammates in the lurch, leave the Giants in the lurch, leave the organization in the lurch, leave the fans in the lurch, and just head home to Canada. If he was physically able to perform at his best and continue to play, he would still be playing the rest of the season out, because this was probably going to be his last season on the ice anyway. And anybody thinks that a player doesn't want to finish their career on their own terms, and in Jason's case, not only on his own terms, but with a championship to boot this season, is mistaken, because that's exactly what he wanted to do. The injury was going to take at least 8 weeks. The chances are he may not have been able to come back and play until possibly the 19th, 22nd of February. There would have only been 4 or 5 league games to go. Yes, there's yes, people will point out, well, there's the playoffs to come after that. But he was offered this opportunity when he was back home, receiving treatment on the injury, over the holidays, and you know, in his position, with you know, if he'd come back and had waited another 4 weeks, two things could have happened. He could have come back, would have been playing the rest of the season, not at 100%, regardless, and he could have come back and re-injured the injury. And anybody who's who plays sport will know that an injury, you're initially out for 6 weeks. If you do it again, it's probably 6 months. And this opportunity came along. It wouldn't have been there had he come back and, you know, and tried to come back and play again. This opportunity may not have still been there come the summer. It's an excellent opportunity for Jason to get his feet wet in coaching, which is what he wants to do, and stay in the sport. And who knows where that's going to lead him, you know. And he has the absolute support of his coach. He's the absolute support of the players and the organisation. And hopefully the support of all the Belfast Giants fans and what he's decided to do. It was by no means an easy decision for him to make, but he's made it for the benefit of himself, his family, and as I say, hopefully the Giants fans will appreciate that.
No doubt they will. No doubt they will, Nigel.
Do you have any highlights of Jason's career that you like to remember back on?
You know what? Hopefully there'll be a piece in the next Game Night program, Top Shelf magazine, the next edition, where actually I'm beginning to troll through the archives of trying to find sort of Jason Ruff's highlights. You know, that line, Ruff, Behrens and Kevin Riel, that led the Giants to the Super League title a few years ago.
Fantastic.
Will go down as one of the best lines that the sport in this country has, you know, had ever seen. But what goes on notice, yes, Jason was a great player in a team with a lot of very good players in those Super League days. But you shouldn't underestimate, when Jason Ruff came back for the first year of Elite League hockey, you know, 2 years ago, he carried that team on his back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Along with Colin Ward and Kurt Bowen. Those three guys carried that team. It was the first year of a new league. The Giants, you know, were forced, because of the financial situation, they couldn't go sign players until very late. They started the season not really being prepared properly. They ran into some injuries, and Jason Ruff took that team and carried them on the back. He was a mentor to guys like Graham Walton and Mark Morrison, and especially Lee Jameson. And these young players learned from Jason Ruff. They've learned from him again this year. So, his lasting legacy will be, of someone who was a great player to watch, both in both ends of the ice, offensively, defensively. He's one of the best two-way forwards ever to play the sport, perhaps the best all-around player ever to play for the Giants. But more than that, he did a lot of stuff in the locker room. He was a leader in the locker room. He took some of these young guys under his wing, has taught them so much, and we're beginning as Giants supporters to see the benefit of that, because look at the season, the guys like Mark Leavers, Lee Jameson, you know, and the improvement in guys like Walt and the Motrian. Look how these guys have improved. Part of that improvement comes from hanging around and being around and playing with guys like Jason Ruff.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about that at all. But I mean, how do you think the team will actually respond with Jason gone?
Well, there is a possibility that Ed Courtney may go out and try and find another player, but you have to bear in mind, of course, that all the leagues all around the world are all still playing. So getting a guy is very difficult, and it's not just a question of getting another player, because if the player who comes in is going to be a replacement for Ed Courtney, who would then go to the bench, the guy has to be as good as or better than the current league leading scorer.
Mm. It's going to be a tough find.
And that's going to be a tough find. So, as much as the Giants may want to look around for somebody at the moment, you know, it's not just a question of just bringing somebody else in. So whoever you bring in has to be better than what's already there. And what's already there is the league's top scorer and a guy who's on fire. He doesn't, you know, it's never Ed Courtney's choice to be playing this season. Every time he said, I'm going back to the bench, another injury has happened. You know, and so far he's been lucky with the way things have worked out, that despite the fact that Jason's retired, there's still a full complement of Giants players there. Now, obviously now you don't want to start picking up injuries, because that would leave you short-benched. But there's still a full squad there of 17 players. Most teams in this league, remember, some teams are playing with four defensemen, the Giants are still playing with six. You know, so, you know, if there's an injury or whatever, you know, you do have some flexibility there. You can move Jason Bowen up as a forward. You can. Lee Jameson's been getting some shifts as a forward, you know. So I don't think there's any need to panic at the moment. The Giants have a lot of scoring depth. We know that. Defensively, they still got their full complement of six defensemen. And so there's certainly no panic, certainly no need to panic at the moment. They've got a huge cushion at the top of the league. And would it be nice to bring somebody in as good as Ed Courtney so that Ed could go to the bench? Would it ever? Those kind of players are very difficult to find, especially at this stage of the season.
It seems to be a yearly thing with the Giants at this stage of the season, that we are always on the lookout for a player, be it replaced with Mark Finney or Stevie Thornton.
Well, with all due respect to Mark Finney, there would be no point in bringing a Mark Finney into this situation. Steve Thornton would be a terrific, you know, I don't know where these guys are. Sometimes you go on the forums or you read things on the internet and, you know, fans, you know, are doing their research already. You know, and just as an example, Steve Thornton would be one example. Sean Behrens would be another obvious example. These guys, if you brought them into this situation, would be good enough for Ed to go to the bench. Of course they would. Thornton's a terrific playmaker. Of course, the Giants are stacked at center. They've got Theo and Colin Shields and Mark Leavers up in the middle on their three lines, as three centermen. So Stevie Thornton's a center, but they're already stacked at that position. Ed Courtney's a winger, so maybe you're looking for a big winger, of course, neither necessarily Sean Behrens isn't big, but he's got the skill and that sort of thing. But it's trying to, certainly the players of that caliber would be, certainly if they came into this situation, obviously add Sean Selznick. There's another guy I read on the internet last night who people, still talk about fondly, even though he only played, what was it, three games?
Three games. Have they scored more against us than he scored for us?
I think, exactly. So, all these names are, but these guys, I'm assuming most of them are under contract and, through the end of the season. And as I say, at this stage of the year, could you find a player? Yes, you could. Would he be a benefit to the Giants? Well, he'd have to be darn good to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. Well, thanks for that, Nigel. I think I've only got one more question to ask you. Of course, you're famous for another things, but probably most prominently is a view from the British G Crew reviewer.
That's kind of sad.
No.
G Crew correspondent.
A correspondent? But that's fair enough. The G Crew correspondent, yeah. Well, there's only one thing I'll ask you. I'll only ask you a very smash hits type question. Is who would be your favourite member of the G Crew and why?
But you know what? I couldn't possibly blow my cover on that one.
Oh, that's very difficult.
I would just be a bit scared that somebody might look up and find out what age I actually am. It might be slightly worrying if they then looked up and found out my favorite member of the G Crew was. So we might just leave it at that.
I think on that note, I think we better move on. Yeah. Well, thanks very much, Nigel, for joining us and answering the questions, and maybe we'll get you on again sometime.
Guys, anytime, it's been a pleasure.
Again, we'd like to thank Nigel for taking the time out to talk to us here at A View from the Bridge. Some interesting insight from Nigel there, Aaron.
Yeah, it's always nice to hear, especially due to the fact he was in Coventry as well, which obviously added a bit to that side of what you were talking about there. And again, it's always nice to hear from Nigel himself.
And also, just to add the sentiment of a sad loss of Jason Ruff to the team.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much more needs to be said. I'm quite disappointed that it appears he won't be there on Saturday. With the injury, and as we'd heard, and as I said to you, I think it was during one of the games when you were over home, I had heard that the injury was very bad, and that it possibly meant that he would be out as long as, towards maybe the end of the season or the playoffs. Obviously, that's been proven to be the case. And it's sad to lose him in such a way, but all the best to Jason when he gets back to Canada, and who knows, maybe in a couple of years we'll see him standing on the bench.
All I do know is that I doubt you'll ever hear another Giant of the Game section from A View from the Bridge.
No, I think it's something we're gonna scrap.
Yes, the curse of A View from the Bridge has struck a number of times now, and I think we're going to keep our mouths shut from now on. A lot of you people out there cheering, but... I think on that note, it's time we wrapped up the show. We'll be back next week, though I don't think we'll be hitting any more technical difficulties, as they say, but we'll be back next week for another one. I'll be seeing yourself in Newcastle on Sunday, Art.
Yes, a game I'm very much looking forward to.
Likewise.
Big, tough game at the top of the league, and I know Newcastle have promised to give the Giants a bit of a tough night on the ice, and no doubt the fans will give us a tough night off the ice as well.
So it's hopefully not as bad as Coventry.
Well, no.
No.
But we'll see. Well, thanks for listening, and if you want to get in contact with the show, of course you can contact us at podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com. You can give us a ring on 0141-416-1296 in the rant line and let us know what you're thinking. Or you can look at the website www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. And thanks for joining us again, Aaron.
Very welcome, and thanks to Nigel as well.
Yeah, thanks, Nigel. And we'll see you next week on A View from the Bridge.